आत्मा विन्दत्यात्मनि यत् सुखम् सुभ्रामयोगयुक्तात्मा सुखम् अक्षयम् आश्नुते. Such a liberated person is not attracted to material sense pleasure or external objects, but is always in trance, enjoying the pleasure within. In this way, the self-realized person enjoys unless, for he concentrates on the Supreme. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Sri Jamuna Acharya, a great devotee in Krishna consciousness, has said, Yadavadi mama cheta Krishna padaravinde nava nava rasa dhamari yuttaratam asit tadavadi bata nari sangame smarayamane bhavati muk. Bhavati mukha vikara shushtu nishtivanam sa. Since I have been engaged in the transcendental loving service of Krishna, realizing ever new pleasure in Him, whenever I think of sex pleasure and material enjoyment, I spit at the thought and my lips curl with distaste. A person in Brahma Yoga or Krishna consciousness is so absorbed in the loving service of the Lord that he loses his taste for material sense pleasure altogether. The highest pleasure in terms of matter is sex pleasure. The whole world is moving under its spell. A materialist cannot work at all without this motivation. But a person engaged in Krishna consciousness can work with greater vigor without such sense enjoyment, which he avoids. That is the test in spiritual realization. Spiritual realization and sex pleasure go ill together. A Krishna conscious person is not attracted to any kind of sense pleasure due to his being a liberated soul. Yehi samsparashaja bhoga dukha jonaya evate An intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery which are due to contact with the material senses. O son of Kunti, such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and so the wise man does not delight in them. For Srila Prabhupada is referring to the great Acharya, Jamuna Acharya. This beautiful sloka that he has written is based on not only the conclusion or the siddhanta of all Vedic knowledge and philosophy, but it is also based on his own personal experience. We can speak so many words, but unless they come from our heart through realization, they will have very little effect in transforming another person's heart. Jamunacharya, he was born of a Brahmin family, and a very spiritual and religious one at that. And when he was very young, according to tradition, he was sent to the Gurukul. And there, he was learning the Vedas, and most of all, he was learning how to be a very submissive and humble servant of his Guru Maharaj. Thadvidhi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya. Krishna says that if you want to know the truth, you must inquire submissively from an authorized spiritual authority, and you must render service in a spirit of humility. So he was only a young boy, and he saw his spiritual master as the representative of God for his life. It is said, yasya prasada bhagavat prasado yasya prasada nagati kutopi, that if the guru is pleased, Krishna is pleased. If the guru is not pleased, there is no way within your power that you can possibly please Krishna. This is the word of Krishna. We may have our opinions, and our friends and our associates may have their opinions, but when it comes to the matter of pleasing Krishna, there's only one opinion, and that is Krishna's opinion. Just like if someone wants to please you, who knows better how to please you than you? If someone who does not know you tells someone, give him this, but you don't like it, it may be pleasing that person, it may be pleasing everyone else, but not you. So that is why, in very simplistic terms, it is very important to approach those surrendered souls who are giving their lives in the service of the Lord, because Krishna reveals his will through them. And such a devotee sees that God is manifesting through my spiritual master. So Jamunacharya had this proper vision. And one day, when his spiritual master was away, there was a very, very proud pundit who was extremely learned in all the scriptures. And he had gone wherever anyone had any dignity of scholarship, and he would defeat them in argument. He would get their name signed, and after they signed their name, he would tax them. He considered them to be like his subjects. And every day, not every day, but every year, every one of these people that he so-called defeated had to pay an excessive tax. So, this man, he was so powerful and so influential in his scholarship of the Vedas. And usually materialistic people are, who have some sense of religiosity, they are very much attracted to these types of people. So the king of the whole state made him his guru. And he protected him on every level. And the king made it the order that everyone who he defeats must pay him tax. That is my guru's will, that is what must be done. And he would seek all of his guidance from this man. The king was very proud of him. He loved to hear him talk. He loved to hear his philosophical word jugglery. So this little boy, Jamunacharya, he was only something like 12 years old, 10, 12 years old. He was sitting at his guru's ashram. His guru Maharaj had left for the day. And the disciples of this pundit had come. Ah, your guru must pay us tax, otherwise we are going to arrest him or take away his property. Ah, why should my guru pay your guru tax? Because our guru has defeated him in argument. He is a subject. Ah, my guru? No one can defeat my guru in argument. My guru is representative of God. I don't know who your guru is. Gurus are supposed to be friendly toward one another. This is all nonsense. Ah, they said, who are you? This is the law. This is the law of the king. You dare to defy? And Jamunacharya said, your guru is a fool. I'm not going to pay him any tax. I could defeat your guru in argument. Because I am a disciple of my spiritual master. So when this got back to the king and to this great pundit, they were very angry. He wants to challenge me? Then let us have challenge. So they challenged. And Jamunacharya, he said, so you accept my challenge? In the king's court, well, you must understand that I am representing a very great soul. I am not speaking my words. I am speaking the words of my spiritual master. And as his representative, if you want me to come to the court of the king, you must send the royal palanquin and take me on that with a procession. Not for myself, but for the good name of my spiritual master. So as the procession was coming, the king was thinking, this is crazy. 12-year-old boy against this great, great scholar who has defeated everyone in all directions. And the queen, she said, when she saw this boy, he was so beautiful and so effulgent and so pure-looking. She said, I bet he wins. The king said, what? You think he's going to beat my guru? Yes, of course. He's pure. So they made a bet. Amongst Kshatriyas, gambling is very common. So the king said, if he wins, I'll give him half my kingdom. So this boy was very clever. Does anyone remember the three questions he asked? He said to this great pundit, I can give you three questions that you cannot, I can lodge three arguments against you that you cannot defeat. And this pundit said, there is absolutely nothing that I cannot defeat. Who remembers what the questions are? One of them was, what were the three questions? Go to my room and get the book, Sri Jamunacharya. One of the questions I remember was, try to defeat this. That the queen is a chaste wife of the king. The king and queen were standing in front of him. This pundit, what? This is an offense. If I defeat him, then the king and queen will kill me. If I prove that she's unchaste, and at the same time, if I don't defeat him, then I lose. He was very clever. We'll wait for the book. You can turn off. First he said to the pundit, try to defeat these three questions. This great pundit who was standing before me. Everyone was listening, the king and the queen. His mother was a barren woman. (Clears throat) The pundit looked at him. How am I to prove that my mother... No, he said, his mother was not a barren woman. That was the challenge. This pundit's mother was not a barren woman. So he had to prove by Shastra that his mother was barren. He was thinking, if he was barren, then I wouldn't be alive today to talk. So how can I? That's a ridiculous question. Nobody can answer that question. My second question is that the king is a very righteous and noble man. And the pundit looked at the king and thought, maybe I know something about you, but I'm not going to say it in front of you. How can I prove that the king is unrighteous? He'll kill me. This is nonsense. Nobody could answer that question without getting their head chopped off. The third question, Jamunacharya said, is that the queen is a very, very chaste woman, the same dignity as Savitri in the Vedic literatures. The pundit was thinking, this is blasphemy. He wants me to prove that the queen is unchaste. This child should be killed. He should be murdered for the offenses that he's trying to get me to speak. And then he said to the child, that if you cannot answer these questions without offending the king and queen and without offending me, then you should be killed for blasphemy. And if you can answer these questions, then I admit defeat. Jamunacharya, very gracefully, calmly, he said, although, my dear Panditji, you are a very, very great and noble man, and certainly you were born to a very good woman, according to the Manhu Smriti, a woman who only has one child is considered barren. And you are the only child. So according to Manu Samhita, your mother is a barren woman. And although, according to the second question, that the king, although he is the most righteous, the most pious, the most religious man that anyone has ever known, according to the Manu Smriti and according to the Shastra, the king has to accept one-fifth of the karma of all the citizens. And because this is the age of Kali Yuga, there's so much karma that out of the mercy of the king, he is accepting such an unrighteous condition. And the pundit, his head was low, and he said, now you prove to me that the queen is unchaste, and see if you live. He said, the queen is the most chaste of all women in the entire kingdom. She is of the level of Savitri. But, according to the Shastra, the king is the representative of all the demigods. So therefore, she has as her husbands all of the demigods. And a chaste woman is only allowed to have one husband. And when the king heard this, he just got up from his throne and said, Haribo! The queen said, they gave him garlands and to give victory, and they gave him half the kingdom. And this is the way the world is. You don't know what to expect next. From a poor man's son, a simple Brahmin living in Gurukul, the next day he was a king. And he was only a child. And it was a big, wealthy, beautiful kingdom. And he had to be in charge of all of the armies. And he had to adjust everything in such a way that everyone was living according to the laws of God. And on behalf of his spiritual master, he accepted position as king. But it describes that as time went on, he became too much entangled in all of the affairs of the state. And he actually became bewildered. And he started becoming very weak and became a great enjoyer of sense gratification. But meanwhile, his father, this is a long story, but his father, who was a very, very learned devotee of the Lord, a great Vaishnava, he assigned one of his disciples to somehow or other take my son away from this kingdom and bring him back to his religious life. And through this process of the association of this great devotee, Jamunacharya came back to his very, very high spiritual position. This is very instructive. Sometimes a devotee has to take risks on behalf of his guru. And sometimes the guru asks the disciple to do what more than what the disciple can actually handle. And sometimes the disciple even falls down in that condition. Not intentionally, but just because he is overwhelmed. But it is explained in the Bhagavatam, and it is also explained in Gita, Api chet sutaracharo bhajate mam ananyabhak sadhureva samantavya samyababhishito hisha. Because the devotee has accepted such a risk only on my order, he is to be considered saintly. And even if he does fall down in that situation, he says, I will quickly deliver him and make him righteous. We were speaking about Maharaj Priyavrat last night. The same thing happened with him. Last night we came to the point where he was living as a brahmachari with Narada Muni, but by his father and grandfather's request, he had to accept the kingdom, which he didn't want. He had to marry Barhishmati. And he was a great, great king. But because of all of the association of so many worldly people around him, even though he was so pious and so religious, he fell into a lot of sense gratification. But because he accepted that position on behalf of his guru, he was protected. And just at the right time, Krishna within his heart gave him the realization of his situation, and he surrendered his entire life. So the same situation took place with Jamunacharya. So therefore, a devotee, on the basis of the order of his spiritual master, is utterly fearless. Because he knows if I honestly and sincerely simply try to do this, I will be protected by Krishna. Even if for the time being, due to the risk I'm taking, there is some difficulty. This is the power of Guru Kripa. And when Jamunacharya came to this stage, actually, because he was a sincere devotee, he had to go through this type of material attachment to ultimately bring him to the highest platform of pure love of God. And when he attained that platform, he became one of the great spiritual masters of Ramanujacharya, who was one of the greatest, greatest of all the spiritual teachers of Indians' religious history. And Jamunacharya wrote very beautiful writings. And in one of these writings, he was revealing his mind in this way. for the benefit of all of us, that although earlier in my life I was very much attached to the pleasures of the love of this world, and it meant everything to me, after tasting the sweetness of service to Krishna, when I even think of material enjoyment, I spit at the thought, and my lips curl in distaste. Param drisla nivartate. We read in the scripture of Vishwamitra Muni how he performed great, great, great tapasya. He starved his senses to maximum degree. He would not allow any of his senses to even touch, even from a distant place, any object of the senses. During the winters, he would go to the Himalayan peaks. He would break the ice of the Ganges. He would go in the water up to his neck. And for 6 months, with his eyes closed, he would just meditate within. What sense gratification can you possibly have in a circumstance like that? And in the summer, he would go to the barren, barren desert where the sun was blazing fire. And he would build 8 raging fires around him in all 8 directions. And he would sit in the middle with his eyes closed, meditating within. In this way, through this mechanical process of Ashtanga Yoga, he was trying to control his senses. And he became so powerful through sense control. When a man or a woman control their senses in a very, very powerful way, they gain great strength, mystic strength. He developed all 8 mystic siddhis. He was so powerful that Indra was fearful. Because you see, even if one is a devotee of the Lord, if one is attached to material sense enjoyment, he's always afraid that everybody is trying to get what he has. And in this material world, the more you have, the more you're afraid. The more you have, the more people are looking to get what you have, and the more you have to defend it. So in one sense, material wealth is almost a curse to the mind. And everybody thinks that everybody else thinks just like me. Huh? That is the nature of the mind. That we superimpose our own consciousness on everybody. So Indra was so attached to his wealth, he was thinking, everyone wants my wealth, and anyone powerful enough to get it is going to try to take it away. This is the nature of material attachment. You're always in anxiety. Even if you become the king of heaven. So, Indra was very clever. You know, he had at one time 1,000 eyes. And you know why he had 1,000 eyes. Everyone knows the story. Gautama Muni had a beautiful wife of the name Ahalya. And she was very beautiful. And Indra was very much attracted. So one time when Gautama Muni was away from his ashram, Indra went, and by his mystic power, he disguised himself to look exactly like Gautama Muni. Exactly. And then he went and said, "Oh, my wife, let us enjoy." And she knew that he was Indra. But because Indra was such an expert person, she couldn't resist. So Gautama Muni, when he came back and saw what happened, he became very angry, and he cursed Indra to have ultimately eyes all over his body. Because he's looking at the wrong people at the wrong time. And he cursed his wife to become a rock. But as we know, the curses of the great sages are always ultimately benedictions. You see, Gautama Muni knew that going through this position of being a rock for some time would purify her so much that ultimately it would attract Ram to come to place his feet on her head. And then by that touch of his feet, she would become completely purified. So Indra, he knew how much he was attracted to the opposite sex. So he was thinking, I'm such a great soul. Vishwamitra Muni, you must be thinking just like me. He wants my wealth. I can also get him in the same way. So he sent Menaka. And she began, this beautiful apsara began to dance where Vishwamitra Muni was doing his meditation. And simply by the sound of his ankle bells, he became attracted. And he gave up all of his austerity, all of his yoga, and became the henpecked husband of Menaka. But after some time, he realized that I'm in Maya. And he again took... Ultimately, he realized that simply by controlling the senses, it is impossible to withstand Maya. The only possible way of permanently controlling the senses from their objects is you have to fix your mind and fix your senses in the service of the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. And it was not until he came to that conclusion that he was a pure soul. Krishna says in the Gita, Param Drisvani Vartate, that it is impossible for any duration of time to control the senses from their objects unless one experiences the highest taste of bhakti or love of God. And when Jamunacharya tasted that sweetness of serving Krishna, he no longer had any interest in serving his own senses. The senses are very, very terrible masters. They demand everything. And ultimately, no matter how much you give the masters of your senses, they're never satisfied, and you're never satisfied by serving them. One great devotee of the Lord, he prayed that just see the nature of these masters of mine, my senses. I've been serving them my whole life through. I've given everything just to serve my senses. I work like an ass just to give some enjoyment to my senses. And they were never satisfied. I gave my whole life. Now I'm 90 years old. My senses are still demanding 24 hours a day that I be their slave, their servant. I want to retire. I want to resign. I want some peace. Now in this world, if you serve some employer, when you reach a certain age, 70 years old, 60 years old, you're allowed to retire. But you've been serving your senses from the day you're born. They'll never allow you to retire. Such cruel masters these senses are. Goswami means one who simply utilizes his senses for serving Krishna. Sarabhopadiva nirbuktam tatvaratvena nirmalam hrishikena hrishikesha sevanam bhaktir uchyate. The same senses that are causing us so much anxiety and bondage now, if they are simply used for the pleasure of the senses of Lord Sri Krishna, then those activities of the senses create not bondage, but liberation from all illusory designations and establish one in one's eternal position. Satchit Ananda. Eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. So this is the formula, which is simple and sublime. Simply learn to dovetail whatever propensities we may have for the pleasure of Radha and Krishna. And that is the exclusive function of this temple. We do not want a temple to just be a social center where people can come and have meetings, or a place where people just come to see the Lord and to go away. Originally, when temples were built in Vrindavan, the original temples were built by Sanatan Goswami, Srila Rupa Goswami, Sri Haribams. These great saints, they built temples for the purpose of attracting people to the beauty of Krishna, and then when they come, to educate them how to serve Krishna, how to utilize their mind and senses for Krishna's pleasure in Krishna's devotional service. And if we go to a temple and we're not inspired to utilize our mind and senses in Krishna's loving service by the time we leave, then really that darshan has had very little, if any, value in our life. The temple is a holy place. It is said in the Srimad Bhagavatam by Vedavyas that one of the symptoms of Kali Yuga is people are attracted to go to the holy places, but they're not at all attracted to submissively hearing from the holy men or women. Sri Sri Radha Gopinath have so mercifully descended from Goloka Vrindavan to appear right here before us at this very moment on this auspicious day. But they will reveal themselves into our hearts to the extent we have a service attitude. Bhakti means a service attitude, not an enjoying mood, but a desire to be enjoyed by them. When we dance, we are dancing only for their enjoyment. When we are chanting the holy names, we are chanting for the enjoyment of Radha and Krishna. In our Krishna consciousness movement, we instruct devotees, we must follow four regulative principles. No illicit sex, no intoxications of any sort, no gambling and no meat eating. But simply by following these regulative principles, you will not make spiritual advancement. You will simply not further incriminate yourself in sinful activities. You're coming more to a neutral state by following the regulative principles. You're not adding fuel to the fire anymore. That is essential. But our spiritual advancement does not come through that. Our spiritual advancement comes through the positive activities that we utilize our senses with, since they're not doing those things. Instead of chanting all nonsense, gossip. Gossip incriminates your mind and karma. Finding fault with others, discussing all frivolous things. But simply, some people become Moni Babas. Our Guru Maharaj said, when someone is inclined to speaking all nonsense, sometimes their guru says, never talk again. It's true. You're better in that state. But infinitely greater than that is to utilize this precious gift of a tongue that Krishna has given you to vibrate his glories for the purification of all the universe. No illicit sex, but in grihastha life, if you are married, you have this natural tendency. If we positively use it for the purpose of procreating God-conscious children as a humble offering to our Guru and Krishna, that is service to the Lord. We become purified by that process even. The natural inclination of the human body is to dance. Every culture throughout the world, when you see a cultural presentation, it's usually always presented through music and dance. When some cultural group comes from Yugoslavia, from Romania, from Italy, from America, from India, from Russia, what do? There's music and dance. It's the universal principle of human propensity. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we see his beautiful darshan at the very top of our temple room. And in each one of these beautiful darshans, what is he doing? He is chanting and dancing. Sometimes with animals. Sometimes with devotees. Sometimes alone. He's always dancing and chanting. He has taught us the process of engaging our mind and senses for the pleasure of Krishna, through chanting the holy names, through dancing, and through offering service to the beautiful form of the deity, and especially to those who are most dear to the Lord, his devotees. Simple process. And in this way, our mind and senses are full with engagement. The idle mind is the devil's workshop. But the mind filled with Krishna conscious activities, devotional service, has no room for Maya. Maya can gain no entrance as long as we are fully engaging our mind and senses in devotional activities. And as I explained, even if our devotional activities create some risk or some difficulty, if we are sincerely and honestly trying to do it according to the direction of the great sadhus, Krishna will protect us. And the destination is to go back home, back to Godhead. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.